Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. We're going to have a great visit this hour with our good friend Jim Ostroff. Jim is an old friend of ours and a member of our Brain Trust. Sitting in for Joan Pry today, Jim is associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. He's our good friend. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Well, good morning, Jim. Good morning, everybody. Happy to be here.
It's good to have you here and bringing the news of the Kiplinger's covering this week. And we have got some good stuff to talk about. But let's talk about a couple of quick things, though, that's in the news.
Yes.
Since you and I talked last, Congress has left the building, so to speak, and 535 Elvises have left the building and have gone out to the hinterlands. Is that right, Jim? Please tell us that's official now.
It is official, and we're safe once again for at least another month.
For at least another month.
Another month,
yeah.
Yes.
But in the meantime, we talked last time about some things that they did at the end of the session, which was very productive. They got they got a highway bill passed, an energy bill passed, and a what was the other one? The CAFTA.
Well, yes, the
CAFTA,
the Central American Free Trade Agreement.
Right. So we got those three things. That's a big deal. They got an awful lot on their plate coming back. So when they come back 1st of September, folks, let's make sure we pay attention to that. There's a lot of really important things going on there. But in the absence of these 535 Elvises, as I said earlier, President Bush has been a little busy little beaver too, hasn't he?
Well, he certainly has, absolutely.
He's made a couple of appointments.
He made a few appointments, and
one very controversial one.
One with John Bolton, or Josh Bolton, as you call
John
him.
John Bolton, yeah.
At the U.S.
Oh, you call him Josh. That's right. You guys are old friends, aren't you?
Yeah. Now that's his nickname. I mean, he goes by Josh. No Josh. And yeah, the president made that appointment. And, of course, that's not unique, perhaps not done all the time, but presidents have done that at some point. And certainly he has and other things, yes.
Well, most presidents have do, you know, in the hundreds sometimes. In fact, Clinton did, you know, 140 or so. Bush 41 did over 100. George Bush has done 100 and something now, I think, appointments.
Right.
But this Bolton thing is really sticking his finger in the eye of the Democrats who thwarted this appointment for months and months. In my opinion, completely unjustifiably, because if there ever was a time when the UN needed somebody to be a little bit forceful, and someone who has the courage of his convictions, and who doesn't think the emperor actually does have clothes when he doesn't, it's John Bolton, and we need a guy like that in the UN, I think, right now, don't you?
Well, yes, and you know, the UN. I'll just say my opinion, but and many share it, has shown, you know, very, even for diplomats and bureaucrats, very little discipline, and just even in spending,
mm-hmm.
And of course, the United States foots a huge portion of their bill year after year, so you have someone, Bolton, who, you know, has made some comments in the past, exactly as you said, and saying, you know, they need to shape up, they got problems, and
I think that's what endeared him to Mr. Bush,
right?
Were
to the
Democrats, that was a vetoing. Those are vetoing responses, and to Mr. Bush, those were endearing responses.
Well, right, and it's just in general, it's a chance for partisanship here, and you know, there's so many other things, so many other appointments that go on of a lesser nature, where there really are some significant, you might say, policy differences, but. They're not high profile, really.
Mm-hmm.
No second, third, fourth tier. Democrats don't raise it, or other times Republicans haven't raised it. And so, you know, it's only pick and choose at a certain high level. We can stand our ground and, we think, make political points. So that's what we're seeing.
Well, and also, folks, I'll just say one last thing on this, and we can move on, Jim. But I just remind people to not lose sight of the offer food thing. This is something that's still being investigated. And whenever you have an opportunity to read anything about that, you're going to find out. It's going to give you an excellent opportunity to develop an opinion one way or the other about the UN. Jim, let's move over and talk about page one on the Kiplinger letter. And that is the news about nuclear plants. What is the news, Jim?
Well, yeah, I mean, Kiplinger has been paying very close attention to energy for many, many years. And we've been through a period here in the 80s, 90s, and even the last few years of this first decade and millennia, period of the millennia, where nuclear energy was really sort of downplayed and even in some ways run away from for two reasons. There's still, after Three Mile Island and Chernobyl, it sort of got a black eye. I will say,
Three Mile Island was what, 81, something like that?
Three Mile Island was 1979 when a plant in Pennsylvania spewed out a little bit of radioactive gas. That was our worst accident in nuclear.
But Jim, that almost was a catastrophe.
It could have been, but the point they made is they had systems in place to shut it down.
It was a serious failure, but the systems basically worked.
They did, and since then there have been a lot more advanced designs, even much better than that. The other thing, though, was frankly cost. You know, these things cost a great deal of money, sometimes well over $1 billion, mm-hmm. and in the face of intractable opposition by some groups and people who just do not want to see these built anywhere near them. It could be 8, 10, 12 years to get these things built. And the point on that, cost a lot of money. Banks are saying and lenders are saying, well, why don't you look at some other type of plant? You know, we don't want to stretch out our money so over such a long period. And then along came natural gas, which is clean, it is said, emits no sulfur or mercury or anything like that.
It was a good deal in those days, a good price.
And natural gas was relatively cheap.
Mm-hmm.
But since, and so the industry went and ran and built hundreds of natural gas-fired electric plants. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then the price of natural gas more than tripled.
Not only the price, but also you got to get the gas there, transporting it. And in those early days, they weren't able to liquefy it and transport it by ship like they can now. So
correct.
We're going to talk about this some more right after these messages. We'll be right back with our good friend Jim Ostroff. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. It's 20 after. Stay with us. Little bit of Chicago for you there. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Jim Ostroff is with us. He's our guest and our good friend, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Jim, we're talking about the probable resurgence of nuclear plants in the United States, and you guys say that there are going to be 15 built over the next 15 years.
Well, that's what we believe, and I should say basically this. It is a matter ultimately here of cost and efficiency. Nuclear, it turns out, is the lowest cost producer of electricity, less than 2 cents a kilowatt hour. And even coal, which provides about half electricity now, is about a little less than 2 cents. Natural gas is coming up to 6 cents and rising.
Mm-hmm.
And demand for electricity is growing. Between now and 2020, demand will grow about 50%.
Wow.
Well, how do you do it? How do you meet it? How do you afford it? People have looked and seen, and they say nuclear can make a big contribution. That doesn't mean it's replacing everything. We're talking about meeting future demand. Thanks, actually, to this administration, which has streamlined the approval process, a gaggle of companies have applied for basically for permits, licensing, and approval to the Federal Nuclear Energy, actually Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And as early as next fall, we may see the agency approve siting for three plants in Illinois, Virginia, perhaps in Maryland, perhaps in Mississippi. Now, that doesn't mean that they get the green light to start going. It'll take a number of years after that to actually get things up and operating.
Right.
But it's on its way because it's and the other interesting aspect here of nuclear energy. Now you start talking with a number of green people, I mean, environmentalists, green through and
yeah,
through,
the
and
greenies.
They say, you know, nuclear is, we need to look at that. The reason is their concern are so-called greenhouse gases, whatever you say about them. They look, they say, hey, nuclear doesn't emit anything. And in an interesting turn here, they look, they say, I say, waste. What about that nuclear waste you've been protesting about?
Right.
No problem. We'll take care of that.
Well, see, that is a concern. You know, with when you burn coal, you've got the fossil fuel emissions that you run into, that's a problem. That kind of waste is a problem. But with nuclear, you don't have the emissions, but you do have the ultimate dealing with the spent rods, the spent fuel that's there,
right.
and that is a challenge. And I you know, it doesn't make me happy to think about burying that in the ground.
Well,
I mean, I've watched enough of those 1950s movies where the animals got were exposed to nuclear and became monsters. You know, I wouldn't want that to happen.
Well, it happened. It has happened already, and we have 535 of them right there on Capitol Hill in Washington.
Jim, hold your hand out. I'm going to have to slap your hand a little bit.
That is fine. I will take that.
You couldn't resist, could you, Jim?
No.
One of the things that you say, you guys point out, that might be a problem for nuclear is the exposure to terrorism. Talk to us about that a little bit.
Well, all right. Right now, virtually all of the spent fuel is stored on site in pools of water or in big, we'll call it almost like concrete casks. They're just held there waiting for some future disposal. The concern is that, you might say, some terrorist group may get hold again of some plane or explosive and blow this stuff up, creating, you know, it might say, a dirty bomb, effectively. And the other is that that terrorists would just carry away this stuff. It is exceedingly unlikely that those scenarios would occur. Security is tight and has been beefed up enormously. And the point here, even if somebody managed to haul away these spent rods, unless they had multi-million-dollar handling facilities, any attempt to take the material themselves would result in their death.
Yeah, I don't see that happening, but I do see the possibility of a planned attack on one of them. Now, their methods are pretty low tech if you think about it. I mean, there's nothing. The technology that the 911 murderers used included box cutters. I mean, that was the height of their technology. Everything else was pretty much just their devious plan. Jim, anyway, it'll be interesting to see how this goes. And folks, you know, you might want to, you know, you're going to have we're all going to have to deal with the reality. If Kiplinger's right, if our demand is going to increase significantly, 50%, as Jim says, over the next 15 years or so, you know, I don't think we're going to want to burn that much more coal, Jim. I don't think we're going to want to, you know, there are trade-offs to everything, aren't there? There's good and bad for everything.
There's nothing perfect under the sun on this earth. There are trade-offs. Now, I should say, of course, and this administration as well is pushing so-called clean coal technology, and we have at least 200 years' worth supply of coal that we know of.
A lot of coal in the ground.
But it costs more. Again, it costs more.
Yeah. A lot of coal in the ground. Jim, hold on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break, folks. It's 29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're going to move over and talk a little bit about the economy. We're going to talk a little bit about the Chinese deciding not to buy Unocal, the Chinese company that was going to buy the oil company out of California, and other ships. Right after this message is 29 After. Stay with us.
Now back to Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The small business advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining us today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Jim Osteroff is our guest. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger letter. And Jim, let's move over and talk about the economy. The economy just keeps turning out good news, doesn't it?
I'm sorry to say it does. I
no,
can't knock it, you know. But the thing, but point is, really, Kiplinger does not take sides. And in the past, we've seen problems and downturns. We've looked at that early on as early and forecast trouble ahead. But the fact is, we've looked at this, and right now, all we can say is that there's blue skies ahead, and it just is a. It goes to show how strong our economy is and how positive the outlook is for at least another next year, the next year or so that we see here. It is roaring on eight cylinders, if not 12.
Well, and the one of the things you guys point out, one of the indicators that you guys identify, is the increased demand for commercial loans.
Absolutely.
And you can thank small business owners for that.
Absolutely.
Because nobody as a class makes a request for commercial loans to a great degree that small business owners do.
Small business owners, and what do they do with that? They create jobs.
That's
they create products,
and
services.
They buy stuff.
And they in turn buy stuff, and that keeps our economy chugging along.
Right.
Small business is the engine of growth in our economy, no question.
Well, a lot of people, and this is a statistic that I love to talk about, and I know I've said it before, but a lot of people still don't get the impact that small business owners make, Jim. We have an $11 trillion economy in the United States, and over half of that economy is created by small businesses. Now, think about that.
Absolutely.
And you know, Jim, the next closest international economy is Japan, and it's less than half of the U.S. economy. So if I have a little speech that I do sometimes where I talk about Small Business USA, and I identify small business as its own country. If we lived in a world where small business was its own country, small business would be the number two economy in the world.
That's right, and it is part of the U.S. economy. But more than numbers, you know, small business is, without question, the, I might say, driver of innovation in our economy and the world economy. Not only technology, but new ways of doing things more efficiently at less cost, all of which, of course, goes to improve our quality of life here, ultimately. And it does. And they're unsung heroes, you know. And thousands and thousands of small companies every day, every week and year contribute an outsized proportion to our U.S. economy and way of life.
Well, and Jim, I'm trying to, if you hear papers rustling, folks, I'm trying to find the article that I thought I had in front of me. But not only is the economy doing well, but one of the sectors, one of the important sectors of the economy that's doing really well, and it's surprised a few people, is manufacturing.
Manufacturing is and has come back. Once again, as we've seen time and time again in our economy, there were challenges, severe challenges. Most recently, everything from, as we know, great intense competition from companies abroad, competition from U.S. companies outsourcing, mm-hmm. and high prices, whether it be for steel or energy. But you know what? Yeah, it created a lot of problems. But once again, there are many, many, many small businesses, small business owners, and say, fine, great, that's terrible. Now we got to find a way to work on this, figure it out, make it better. And they have. And therefore, manufacturing is on the upswing once again.
Well, and the thing is that what's happening is the U.S. economy has been going through a metamorphosis over the last 10, 15 years or so. And well, actually, the global economy has been. And so what we've gone through in the last 2 or 3 or 4 years has been maybe one of the greatest upheavals in this metamorphosis, because we have had so many people who are misplaced, and we're not able to get them redirected into something productive. And I think we're seeing that now. I think we're seeing where those people are finding their new place in the 21st century, and I think that's one of the reasons why the economy is doing so much better. Jim, we're going to take a quick break in a second. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Chinese company CNOOC that was going to buy the California U.S. Petroleum company Unocal. Well, we've got some news about that, as you may have heard about. We're going to talk about that just a little bit. We're also going to move over and talk about some homeland defense issues and a few other things with our good friend Jim Ostroff right after these messages. It's 20 Tales. Stay with us.
There must be some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion.
The Godfather, 17 Till. How can you stand still when you hear that, Jim Ostroff? You just got to move a little bit, don't you?
No. Huh? Godfather of soul. He's still going strong.
James
God bless
Brown,
him,
that's right. We got the Godfather of soul and the Godfather of Kiplinger here with us, too. Jim
More
Ostroff,
like
ladies and gentlemen.
More like the godson. Happy to have you.
Yeah, the godson of Kiplinger. There you go. I like that. I guess Austin would have a little debate about who was the godfather over there, right? Austin Kiplinger,
Kiplinger. The Kiplingers are. They built it, and they run it, and they do a good job, in all
absolutely.
Honesty.
And speaking of Kiplinger, folks, I encourage you to check out their website, kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R. No extra letters in there, kiplinger.com. A lot of good stuff that you can get just showing up on their website. But if you want to go into the bowels of their website and find out some of the stuff that's the reporting that people like Jim Ostroff and Joan Pride and Jerry Idizac and others have write about it every week, you can do that by being a subscriber to their stuff, their resources and their publications. The weekly letter, the Kiplinger letter, is the one, the flagship. Is that next month, by the way, you guys are going to be celebrating the 82nd, I think it is. Is it 80? I think it's 82nd anniversary.
That's right.
And
yeah.
And we'll be doing the show on that too. But also the three biweekly letters, the tax letter, the California letter, the agriculture letter, and then the magazine, the Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine. Jim, give us that phone number.
Yeah, you can call for subscription information toll free at 800-544-0155.
And tell them I sent you, and they'll give you a 30-day free trial, by the way, folks.
They do.
Okay, they'll do it even if you don't tell them I sent you. But you might want to mention that. And let me know what they say. Hopefully they won't hang up on you. But you can also subscribe online. I encourage you to do that. Jim, let's move over and talk about this Unocal issue. As many people know, a few months ago or so ago, CNOOC, C-N-O-O-C, is the name of a company, a Chinese oil company that's 70% owned by the Chinese government, by the way. That's one detail that wasn't brought out early on, I think. Wanted to buy a U.S. company, Unocal. And they were in competition with some other companies that were trying to buy Unocal. And this is a pretty controversial transaction, wasn't it, Jim?
Oh, absolutely. Because one, I mean, it really is very high stakes. Unocal controls, not only is it a major U.S. refiner, but it controls large amounts of oil reserves. And so there is a concern here, no question, that you have essentially the Chinese government buying not only a U.S. company, but buying vast amount of oil reserves.
Right.
And
right.
We've seen already here, just even on the open market, that China has been willing to pay top dollar and top dollar to buy oil on the market, basically taking it off and really helping to keep prices sky high.
Right, exactly.
And basically this. You know, CNOOC, the Chinese company, has called it off. They're not going to do it now, but they're they apparently lost their bid for Maytag, but they're going to be there again. They're going to keep pounding on the door because we're seeing something we've seen time and time again over the centuries, a growing economy, whether or not it's free market or not, and they want to assure themselves adequate supplies of raw materials. They've been buying it on the market, but it would be better if they could own it. So they're out there shopping.
If this is a Chinese company that's wholly owned by investors all over the world, like when Daimler bought Chrysler, you know, or something like that, if this were that type of a transaction, then I wouldn't have a problem with a Chinese a Chinese company, which is, by the way, is listed on the New York Stock Exchange, buying Unocal or something like that. But when it's owned by 70% by the Chinese government, and then in the middle of the transaction, one of their generals rattles a saber at the United States in case we should try to defend Taiwan in any kind of a tension between those two, the island and the mainland. You know, that doesn't help things. That doesn't smooth out the details. And when that general rattled that saber, I you could tell that at that point that the deal was cooked. And as it turns out, as you say, they're not going to be doing that. But this is a very interesting thing. And I think what this is, Jim, is just more of the education process of the Chinese as they want to come into the 21st century marketplace. Because, as you know, 20 years ago, their economy was basically zip. It was basically zero. And we knew very little about it.
That's right. And the worry here, let me just say, is we have seen this before. For instance, 73, after the war, when the so-called Yom Kippur War, and afterwards a number of Middle Eastern nations, OPEC members, cut us off.
Right.
And again, ultimately it's for their own political reasons here, and the U.S. and other economies took an enormous hit.
Right.
Again, for political considerations. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly going to happen again over here. And at some point, China says, now we need to settle this Taiwan issue. No
right.
oil. Then
right.
what?
Yeah, exactly. Jim, let's move over and talk about Homeland Security. You guys report this week that Congress wants to beef up defenses against biological warfare. How are they going to do that? I tell you what, hold on to that thought. I can't let you get started because we've got to go to a break. Hold that thought. That's the question we're going to come back to. And then after Jim answers that question, there's some good news for Southwest Airlines and free markets. We had a little bit of protectionism going on here in the United States that you might not have known about. We're going to talk about that right after these messages. 10 till. Stay with us. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Jim Ostroff is our guest, and he's with the Kiplinger Editors. Their website is kiplinger.com. Jim, let's talk about Homeland Security. I think I asked you a question about what Congress is working on with regard to beefing up
biosecurity. I mean, the fact is, and everybody knows this, unfortunately, there are a number of terrorists out there that would love to be able to go and cause mayhem and commit murder by spreading terrible bacteria and viruses in this country and elsewhere. If they can get a hold of it, they will. Many people say, no matter what we do, it may just be a matter of time. I mean, hey, we saw this anthrax attack here in fall of 2001 as well. So, one Homeland Security here is, which is now taken on one guy, Jeff Runge, a medical doctor who formerly headed up at Highway Traffic Safety Administration, developing new plans here, one to try in every way to minimize the possibility this could ever occur. But if it did, looking for ways to mitigate any horrible fallout. And one thing they're doing here, they're saying, okay, we need to go and we need antidotes and we need vaccines. And the quickest way of doing it is to offer manufacturers basically liability protection. Mm-hmm. That is a big issue today.
Because this is playing with fire, making this stuff, isn't it?
Oh, it certainly is, and we've seen that time and time again. Even manufacturers of polio vaccines and others suddenly find themselves in court. So they're looking to offer liability protection for people who would manufacture vaccines against smallpox, Ebola, bubonic plague, and anthrax, and all these other horrible things that could cause untold thousands of deaths in our country.
Right. Well, that's good news, and I'm glad the government is working on that. That is certainly an important step that they need to take. Jim, let's move on down and talk about the airline industry. Years ago, when Southwest Airlines started in Dallas, they went to Love Field, and they were operating out of Love Field, and the government, in order to help promote the new airline, the new airport, I should say, the Dallas International Airport, the Bush, I guess it's called the Bush Airport, isn't it now?
Now it is, yes.
Yeah, the Bush Airport. In order to promote that and to help, I guess, American Airlines develop that, they basically restricted the cities that Southwest Airlines could go to, didn't they?
That's right. Relatively
short hop.
Making it very difficult, even, you know, I mean, if you wanted to fly today.
Talk about restraint of trade by the government.
Right. Now, this is our government in a classic way helping. There were obviously politics involved as well, helping one airline over another. But that's over. That's over now.
And Southwest, which is an incredible success story in a horribly defective industry, an industry with lots and lots of problems, the airline industry. Southwest has been one of the bright spots, hasn't it?
Absolutely, it is a stellar performer, and it keeps on rolling. And just remember, it also, like the others, is moving hundreds of thousands of people in our country by air.
And if I'm not mistaken, Jim, when the government offered bailout money to the airlines, if I'm not mistaken, they didn't take a penny.
Not 1 cent. No, they didn't want that money because they're operating in the black very profitably.
But now their routes are opened up. They can go wherever they want to go, can't they?
That's right. And it may be bad news for some of the older airlines, but that's
competition.
That's competition.
And the competition needs to be free and open. And they were successful in with negative competition, with help from the government. A preposterous story that had gone on there. And I'm glad that's been straightened out. Another good news, Jim, is the older pilots. What's the news for older airline pilots?
Well, finally here, I might say, the U.S. is permitting, you know, commercial pilots to keep on flying after age 60.
Prior to this, they'd had to retire.
They had to retire. That's it. I mean, no question about it that you're too old. We can't trust you, and you're out of here. Find some other work, line of work. But now, as long as they, you know, can provide, take various medical tests, the same tests they're taking at age 59 to show that they're up to the job, they can keep on flying.
That's good news. That's going to be good news because we don't need a shortage of airline pilots because that's an industry. It is growing as much as the industry is having trouble. It's more and more people are wanting to fly. Hey, Jim Ostroff, thank you for being here. Great job today, as always.
Thank you.
We enjoy having you here. Thanks for being here. Jim Ostroff, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back, I promise. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.